Hello, this is Jungle Jim. Jungle Jim at your service. For those of you who don't know, I am by trade a theologian. Theo meaning God, lo meaning opposite of high, and jun, as in Jungle Jim, of course. I obtained said status as a theologian by attending many a higher institute of learning. For example, I attended Greetings University, where I learned to say hi. It's quite fascinating. All the freshman classes tend to be rather rude, but by the time people graduate, they're all quite friendly. And also, I attended the highest of higher learning institutes, Mount Everest University. Of course, most everyone in the world has heard of Mount Everest, tallest mountain in the world. Yet they have failed to hear of Mount Everest University. And I have come to believe that it's because of our sports programs, or lack thereof. Most people know universities by their sports teams and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, at Mount Everest University, we've had a very difficult time in said arena. It's not that we didn't have athletic students, it's just that we had a slant problem. No, I don't mean a slight problem, I mean a slant problem. We had no flat places on which to build fields and courts and such. It's not that we didn't try. For example, the very first sport we tried was football. No, not the American football, not that strange sport where if someone actually ever does strike the ball with one's foot, the whole crowd is in so much shock, everyone's taken aghast so badly that they have to break for a commercial every time it happens. It's a very odd. No, I'm talking about what you Americans call soccer, the real football, shall we say. Yes, we built a soccer field and we tried, and going uphill was rather difficult, but it seemed to, we felt like it would still work out okay. It's just that going downhill, there was one slight problem. Kicking the ball downhill tended to, it tended to start an avalanche. And so, 2 or 3 hours later, after we all dug ourselves out of the snow, and if you found the goal and was able to dig it out, and the ball, and if you were unlucky enough to find the referee and dig him out of the snow, or her, whoever it happened to be at the time, it just, and then set everything back up, it just wasn't any fun. You know, it took several hours just to do that, and so we quickly abandoned that sport. So we decided, let's try something indoors. And so we tried, first we tried basketball. And there we had, we had this fellow named, we nicknamed him Jumpin' Joe. Jumpin' Joe was like Michael Jordan of the days of old, or Blake Griffin of now, just one of the best jumpers you ever saw, because going at least in the downhill direction, he could take off from the free throw line and dunk the ball two-handed. The opponent's free throw line. Yes, but going uphill, he was probably about the only one who could touch the bottom of the net. But the problem with basketball is they have all these rules about timing and such, where, you know, you have to get the ball across half court in 10 seconds or so, and they have to shoot after so many seconds. And we decided that just our court was a little too difficult to play by said rules. So we threw those rules aside, and we tried a game, and it went about like what I expected. We tipped the ball tipped off, the team going downhill got it, dunked it, the team going uphill, by the time they got it across half court and were ready to shoot, it was halftime. And so that didn't go so well. So finally we tried swimming. We figured we have an indoor facility. Let's try swimming. And I thought things were going along rather swimmingly, if you will, until we tried to put water into the pool. It flooded the entire biology department. Much to the delight of the marine biologist, I must add. And to this day, the biology department is now the official Mount Everest University Aquarium. So it just didn't go very well. And that's why I think people haven't heard of Mount Everest University. But that's not why I'm here. I'm not here to talk about said things. I'm here to tell you a parable. Not one of my own, of course. I want to share with you one of Jesus' most famous parables. And what's a parable, you ask? Well, very good question. A parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning to it, a spiritual meaning to it. Things in the story can be symbolic of God, Jesus, even Satan, angels, other spirit, you know, the spiritual beings. And things that happen in the story can teach spiritual truths about love and hate or shrewdness, wisdom, etc. And the reason that they are called parables is because the very first such story told was about a pair of bulls. And so the name just seemed rather apropos at the time. Now, Jesus told the most famous parables in the world. And depending on who you're with or where you are, different groups tend to have their favorite ones. For example, in Japan, they tend to love the parable of the Good Samaritan. In the government seats of the world, they tend to love the parable of the prodigal son. And seamstresses and tailors tend to love the parable of the sower. But I have found that just like with the Bible stories, people don't know the parables of Jesus like they used to. For example, when I start talking about the parable of the Good Samaritan or the political son, people look at me like, Jungle Jim, who are you talking about? We've never heard of this Samaritan fellow, and et cetera, et cetera. And I've come to think, I've come to believe that perhaps we've done a poor job in naming the parables. Jesus didn't name his own parables, of course. He didn't say, I'm about to tell you the parable of the such and such. But no, we read what he said, and then we decided, well, we'll call it the parable of this, the parable of that. And I think we didn't name them well enough. Perhaps we're lacking in a little bit of detail. But that's neither here nor there. My solution has been to give the parables my own name. But beside all that, I am here to tell you one of Jesus' most famous parables. And it is the parable that I call the parable of the servant who owed a king a bunch of money. The king called him in to pay it and couldn't pay it. But the king commanded that he and his wife and children all be sold. And he begged for forgiveness. The king forgave him. He went out and found someone who owed him money. He begged forgiveness. He didn't forgive him. Threw him into jail. With some servants on, went back to the king. The king was angry, brought him in, and threw him into jail. And so let me tell you, if you have never heard this parable before, it's one of Jesus' best. There are so many twists and turns in the plot. You'll be on the edge of your seat wanting to know what is going to happen next. And one of the more interesting things about this parable is that it was told in response to a question. A question asked by Peter. Now, who was Peter? Peter was one of Jesus' special followers. Understand that Jesus had many followers called disciples. They were committed to learning Jesus' ways, Jesus' teachings, and incorporate them into their lives. But among all these disciples, Jesus chose 12 to be his special messengers. And he gave them a special name. They were called the 12 Apostles. And the reason they were called the 12 Opossums was because one of their favorite games was for 11 of them to play dead, while the 12th played the part of Jesus, bringing them back to life. And so, of these 12 opossums, Jesus had three who were very special friends to him, his best friends, if you will. And they got to do things with Jesus that others didn't do. They were Peter, James, and John. They got to go on a mountain with Jesus, and they saw Jesus transfigured, transformed before them. His clothes became whiter than any launderer could ever make them. And the spirits of Moses and Elijah appeared, and they talked with Jesus about his impending death. They saw Jesus do miracles that others didn't get to see, such as raising a girl from the dead and other things, and they got to eat s'mores and roast hot dogs together when the others didn't and such. And so they had a very special relationship with Jesus, and I think it's because of this special relationship that Peter felt free to come to Jesus and to ask him a question. And so he asked Jesus, "Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to 7 times?" Now, oh, Peter, you can't fool the Son of God. You can't fool Jesus. He knows exactly what you're doing. And you say, "Well, Jungle Jim, what are you talking about?" Oh, that wasn't Peter's real question. He was asking a question in camouflage. You know how we do that. Sometimes there's a situation in our life and we're kind of embarrassed about it and we want to ask about it, and so we come up with a question that applies without embarrassing ourselves in the process of asking, or we want to make sure that we get the answer we want. And so we rephrase things when we ask them in order to really get the answer we are seeking. And so, how often shall my brother sin against me? Up to 7 times? That wasn't Peter's real question. For example, when he said brother, what he really meant was wife. And by sin, he meant get on my nerves. And the reason he said up to 7 times was because he felt like she had already gotten on his nerves up to 17 times that day, and he wanted to set the bar rather low. But Jesus knew all this, and he just decided, "Oh, I'll just play along here." And so instead of giving Peter a yes or no answer, Jesus did something very unusual here. He said, "I tell you, not up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. To which Peter responded, 7 times 0 is a 0, nothing to carry. 7 times 7 is a, oh no." My mother always said, "Oh, Peter, learn your 7 matrix." My teacher always said, "Oh, Peter, learn your 7 matrix. Learn your 7 matrix." And I hated the 7 matrix. The 7 matrix. And so Jesus saw Peter straining at the mathematical wheel there. And so he decided that before poor old Peter had a math attack, he better just go ahead and explain what he meant. And that is when he told this parable. He said a certain king had servants who owed him money, and he wanted to settle accounts with them. And one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, you may be thinking, "Wow, that's a lot of talents. Let's see, there's singing, there's dancing. Let's see, what else? Maybe juggling. That's a lot." No, not that kind of talent. Talent was a monetary term. It referred to a rather large amount of silver or gold. It was measured by weight. And to give you an idea of how vast an amount of money that 10,000 talents was, let Jungle Jim help you here. 10,000 talents was exactly one more talent than 9,999. Now, see, you understand. I have read that in doing some research that working at a normal day's wage, one would have to work between 14 and 17 years just to have one talent, let alone 10,000. So we're talking about a vast sum of money here, billions of dollars, hundreds of billions, maybe even in the trillions, maybe even as much debt as this country has incurred from the time I began speaking to you until now. And if that doesn't blow your mind away, I mean, what else will? So it was a vast sum of money. And the king asked the servant, are you able to pay? And the servant, of course, didn't have that amount of money. And he said, well, no, I can't. And so the king commanded, sell this man, sell his wife, sell his children, sell all that he has so that payment can be made. Oh, and hearing this, the servant was very upset, fell on his knees before the king and begged for mercy and compassion, saying things like, please, please, don't sell me, don't sell my wife, don't sell my children. How much do you think I could get for the teenager? Never mind. Please don't sell my possessions. Please give me time. I will pay you back everything. I'll pay you all. Please, 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 please. And so the king did more than just give him more time. In fact, he did something entirely different. He forgave him the debt. Much to the shock, I would imagine, of all the servants there seeing this scene play out before them. Much to the shock, I would imagine, of the servant himself being completely forgiven, not having to pay back this incredible debt. Now, this servant was, how shall I say, in my opinion, he was kind of like a moonless night on a how should I say it? Yes. He was like a moonless midnight, not very bright. Kind of like the kind of like the time we had the outdoor yodeling contest at Mount Everest University. But anyway, that's another story for another day. I say this because this forgiven servant went out and found someone else who owed him money. Owed him 100 days' wages, as it were. Oh, and he ran up to the servant and he hugged him and said, oh, the most wonderful thing has happened to me. I owe the king this incredible sum of money. He forgave me. I forgive you. That's exactly what happened, Jungle Jim. You don't even have to say it. Well, no, that is not exactly how it went down, as they say. No, this forgiven servant went up and found one of his fellow servants, as I said, who owed him money, and he took him by the throat and said, pay me what you owe. To which his fellow servant replied, Oh, let me take my hand, drop your throat. Let's see. Now, where were my manners? Let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, pay me what you owe. And his fellow servant fell at his feet, begged for mercy and compassion, and said, please, 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 give me more time. I'll pay you back everything. Oh, and then he realized that just as he begged the king for forgiveness, here was his fellow servant begging for forgiveness. And so he happily forgave him, and everybody lived happily ever after, Jungle Jim. We know that's exactly what happened. Not exactly. Instead of forgiving his fellow servant, or at least allowing him more time to pay the debt, This servant took the man and had him thrown into prison until he could pay the 100 days' wages that was owed him. And remind, 100 days' wages, it's a fair amount of money. If you worked an average day's wage for 100 days, it's a decent amount of money. But 10,000 talents, you'd have to work 14,000. No, 140,000 to 170,000 years just to have 10,000 talents. The amounts were incomparable. And yet, he threw his fellow servant into prison. Now, this servant was not only, as I mentioned, not the sharpest pencil in the teacher's desk. He was also not, how shall I say it, like Jungle Jim when he's watching TV, not very observant. I mean, just ask my wife. I don't want to go off on that tangent. Because he did all these things in front of servants who had seen him begging the king for forgiveness. And his fellow servants were aghast. They were horribly upset. Went back to the king and said, "Oh, king, you know that servant whom you forgave? The 10,000 talents?" And of course, the king was like, "Well, of course I remember him. How could I not?" And they explained, "Well, he went out and found a man who owed him money, 100 days' wages." And you could just see the king jumping to conclusions and say, "Oh, and he forgave him just like I forgave him. Oh, that is so wonderful. Thank you for sharing this fantastic news with me." But no. Oh, king, he took this man, refused to forgive him more time, and threw him into prison. Now, upon hearing this, the king was hot, because it was 95 degrees that day. And he was angry. And he said, "Bring that servant before me." And so they went and found the servant. He came to the king. And the king said, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Should you not also have forgiven your fellow servant, just as I forgave you?" To which the formerly forgiven servant responded, "Mother." And so the king said, "Take this man, hand him over to the torturers until he should pay all that is due me." Now, having told this parable to Peter, Jesus did something he didn't normally do, but this is what he did was worth more than platinum, shall we say. He explained the meaning of the parable. There was no guessing. Jesus told Peter, "So will my heavenly Father do to you if each of you, from his heart, does not forgive his brother, his sister, his wife, their trespasses." Now, that, understand, I'm extrapolating now. He basically said those things. But what the important point is, Peter got the message. Now the question is, will you get the message? No. I'm not talking about going out and buying the message. You can get what version of the Bible you want. The message is kind of a paraphrase kind of thing. It's not very literal. How did I get off on this tangent? Anyway, no. What I meant was, did you get the point? God is willing to forgive you of anything and everything you do. No matter how many sins you sin against him, and compare the number of sins you sinned against God, that I've sinned against God, compared to the number of sins that people have sinned against us. And you can't compare them. and yet God is willing to forgive you. But you must be willing to forgive others. Now, search your heart and ask yourself, am I holding grudges against a family member, a friend, a business that you felt like did you wrong, a stranger, whoever it might be? Forgive them, that you might receive the forgiveness of God. This is Jungle Jim. Jungle Jim at your service.